In the kitchen of intrigue, Kurt Jackson and Chris Kellel are cooking up a batch of mystery soup.
Each episode serves a new blend of tips, tactics, trends, and tales from the business and design sides of the escape room world.
So grab your spoon, because this episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
Mystery Soup. Welcome to Mystery Soup, the podcast about escape rooms for owners, enthusiasts. I don't know. It's a work in progress. We're early into this, but we are making our way, having a lot of fun, and I am really excited about this episode. But first, we've got Chris, my co-host. Chris is a co-host on another podcast that we do in the summer camp industry, called Scamp Life, the programming side. We just hit our 200th episode over there, but we are both enthusiasts of escape rooms.
And most of our summer camp episodes, we talk about escape rooms.
It's so true. Recently, my girlfriend and myself did a 8-month RV trip around the country, including Canada. So around North America, we played over 280 rooms and had a great time. She used to own an escape room that I managed, and we are now back in Florida, and we're looking to open a new business because that one was sold in order for us to do that trip. This is the passion, the whole escape room thing. Mm-hmm. And so having a podcast made sense, and Chris was on board with it. Yep. He puts together escape rooms for camp.
We're building a new one right in the middle of building a new one right now. So,
yep. Yeah, so different. If you heard our last episode, puzzle room. Yeah. Yep. So this should be episode 3, and we are excited to have John Brooks. Black Mountain Escape was one of the escape rooms that we went to, had a blast, really enjoyed. In fact, North Carolina has some great rooms, some great owners. John, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I grew up in Central Virginia and ended up in college in South Carolina and spending my summers as a counselor at a camp. We have camping in common because I went on to parlay that into a 30-year career as a camp director. So retired in 2013 from that, but loved every bit of it. And my wife and I still live adjacent to the property of the camp that I helped run, and we have an adult daughter and son, and I'll say more about how they have helped us out in this new endeavor, but yeah, that's me.
Nice.
So you worked at a summer camp, and we've all done that, and we love summer camps and things like that. Did you have an escape room at your camp by any chance? Was that a thing?
We did not. I was there through 2013, and yeah, I don't think I'd heard of the concept even at that point. A few years later, as I began to hear the concept, but like others, didn't really have an idea of what it was.
The camp you worked at, do they have one now by any chance?
They don't, as far as I know. Yeah, I'm curious if what you're creating for camps is pop-up rooms or one that they will have there consistently.
Yeah. I say the one I have, we put in like a normal escape room, pretty simple. It's on a camp budget, so not all the tech. Yeah. But it's a huge hit. In fact, last weekend we had a retreat group, a bunch of ladies out here, and they loved it. And so it's very popular.
I'm making a note because you've given me a new business idea. I'll approach the folks that bought us out right. And see if they want to.
Yeah. Chris, you had the Mad Scientist one first.
Right? Yeah. So I've had 3 different ones at camps now. We did a Mad Science one, and then Kurt came in to my past camp. So I'm at a new camp now. Kurt came and helped me build one that is, we call it Professor. Oh, it was a villain, a goofy villain one. And then right now we're in a castle trying to find the quest for the golden pineapple. So
nice.
John, and when we put together the second one, the villain one, it was like an old storage, a building.
It was way back when it was the old shower houses that they put them in cabins. And so then it was just storage for years.
So we had to take everything out, and we fought off snakes, literally snakes to
one,
to build
one
a
fell
thing.
On Kurt from those yeah. from the rafters.
Oh, I'm traumatized. John, tell us about Black Mountain Escape Room.
Yeah, very good. Black Mountain, North Carolina is just east of Asheville, North Carolina, in the mountains of Western North Carolina. Asheville had a couple of escape rooms when we first got interested, but we wanted to be Black Mountain's premier escape room. So it was 2017. And again, I'd heard the idea, the concept, but didn't really have know what it was all about. So we were visiting my brother and his family in Charlotte, and my kids and their cousins said, hey, let's do an escape room. So we went to one and I got hooked. And so the next day we looked for another one and went to a second. The third day, my wife's sister and her husband lived nearby. We said, hey, we've got an idea for us. We went to a third one. So three in as many days. Wow. And driving home that November from a Thanksgiving break, I called a young friend. He was about the age of my kids. And hey, I said, have a business idea for us. I had a young business partner who I knew was a motivated entrepreneur, and he had never done an escape room, but he knew the concept. One of the first things we did was go to one of the local rooms and played that. But that was a fun experience, and it gave birth to our first room in the basement of the oldest building in Black Mountain. And it was ship themed. So it's like a World War II destroyer. It's been hit by a torpedo, and the group has to get on board and get the battle plans out of the safe. We had low ceiling constraints, and we thought, let's do a ship where this kind of confinement would make sense. So we wanted an immersive set. And yeah, I won't do any spoilers, but it was a creative way that we created our set. And so that has remained popular. At the time, we thought, okay, 2 years in, we'll change this out and make it an airplane or something. But we've kept it and continue to get business with that room.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked on your website. You guys are in the oldest building. Is that what I said or
that
saw?
That is correct. That's correct. Built around 1895 by a family.
That's awesome.
Who they had a wooden grocery store and they wanted to build this permanent, brick structure. And yeah, it was a grocery store and then a boarding house. They built it so people could stay upstairs as they got off the train. And the depot is literally just across the tracks next to our building.
That is really
no neat. Passenger rail anymore, but that was the history of our spot, which I'll say our first pop-up room after doing our first permanent room, we wanted to tie to the history of the town and the building. And so we did a kind of precursor to one of our rooms now as a pop-up room in the fall. And that was a lot of fun because we got to work on fresh puzzles and new ideas. And we pulled in a friend who helped us brainstorm. So that was a fun part of our
You didn't want to make that a permanent room?
So we did. We made it a prequel, knowing that we had this broader idea for a time travel room. That gave us more time to think through the storyline and actually acquire a little more space for our time travel room.
Okay. Yeah. Tina and I are in the touristy area, but it's big on fishing. And so one of the rooms that we're looking to do is a fishing room, just to play on the history a little bit. She's really up on the idea. And I don't know, because you get a lot of tourists, are they going to be into that?
So interesting you should say that, because we did get great response from locals who were learning things they didn't know about the town about this family. But I've seen comments that people have left where they referenced that. They liked the fact that there was a tie to history and they weren't from around here. Yeah, I encourage you in that. I think that's,
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A fun time.
Nice.
Being in your historic building, have you had any issues? I don't know if you're on like a historic landmark or anything like that. Is there any like government requirements that you can do or not do in your building because of it?
So we are on the National Register of Historic Places. We own the building, so we can actually do whatever we want with it.
Okay.
But we would risk or we would not get any funding for certain projects. It's funny, we changed out all the windows this year and have asked our accountant if there can be some write-off because of preserving the history that way. But yeah, really, that hasn't been a hurdle. Yeah.
Good. So I know there's a church in my area that's on one, and they have to ask before they can even paint. Like, they have to get permission on colors and stuff even. So
interesting. I guess it's you have to ask if you want to keep that status. I'm not sure exactly how the rules apply, but we were not restricted other than with local building codes. Yeah.
That's good.
Those escape rooms that were in the area when you started, are they still around?
So interestingly, the first one I took my business partner to, I would say was, it was two dimensional. It was literally just posters with a lockbox beneath each poster, basically.
Oh, wow.
And they did not last. They were in a location, a mall location. But for being new to the thing, we enjoyed the mental challenge of that and felt, okay, we can make ours more immersive. I guess that was the thing with the third room I did in Charlotte. The second room was high tech. The first room had some really fun storyline stuff. The third room was a mom and pop, almost like a grandma's attic thing. And I realized, oh, they've just taken stuff they had around their house and created some clever puzzles. And I thought, we can do that. And then that first local, when we realized, okay, we can try to go a step further. So two have gone out of business in our region, two others. And when I say two businesses, one of the business and another person you should interview has three locations now and is doing really well as a mom and pop.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Shout out Fox and Otter.
Yeah. we played there too.
All right. Interview Farron.
Yeah. Cool. It's funny because you talk about being immersive and everything else. And yet some of those mom and pop places that aren't so high tech, they could be really fun. And I think about the Louisiana area. We went to the 13th Gate, and 13th Gate, you're just like, wow, it's very immersive. It's very big and it's impressive. But Clou Carré has a couple locations. They're smaller games. They aren't 13th Gates, but they're just fun. And we just have so much fun when we played their rooms that we're like, okay, this isn't 13th Gate impressive. Doesn't have a lot of tech that they do, and it's not really immersive, but man, the puzzles are just a good time, and it's good. It's not like posters and boxes underneath. They're professional, but there's just such a difference between the two. But I tell you what, we had so much fun at Clou Carré.
That's great. That's great.
So Asheville's pretty touristy, right? There, from what I've
it
never
is
been
indeed.
There.
It is. And I feel like we caught Black Mountain at the right time because there are a number of retreat centers in the area for various groups and denominations. And so we're one of the only things that comes up for things to do around me in this area. But we also get Asheville traffic as well.
Is there certain times of year a little bit busier because of the tourism, or?
I guess summer's busier. Surprisingly, a lot of the restaurants get really slow in the winter, but our escape room has done well in the winters. You know, I guess a warm place to have an activity. Yeah. Our lightest month, I don't know if this is true across the board, but is May, as people are finishing up school and focused on that transition. I don't know.
That makes sense. But, I can see that.
Yeah.
May's a busy month for the, like, you got proms, you got graduations, you got all that. It's chaotic.
You did these few rooms in Charlotte and then decided, hey, let's do this. Did you immediately go and play other rooms, or are you like, after three rooms, we built this amazing room?
Here's what it is. And you all get this. I think work in camping and as a camp director preps you well for creative thinking and for game theory and for saving random things that you know can be used eventually in something you hadn't thought of yet.
So accurate.
And I still had a lot of that. My wife had me get it out of the house, and I used the basement of the space that's now the escape room to store some of that. So as we were coming up with puzzles, we were looking, some of them were based on things we just had and thought, hey, this can be a cool widget or whatever.
Right.
And I'll say this, the most exciting part of the whole process for me is the brainstorming and storyboarding of the gameplay and game flow. And so this young creative guy and I have had fun with that. And since then, all of the rooms we've pulled our staff in, and they make that, you know, we involve them in not just play testing, but in coming up with some of the the games and props.
And
for us, part of it was we thought, okay, let's attempt this and attempt some unique puzzles on our own before we've played too many other rooms, just so we can see what we're capable of with fresh eyes. And then we began to take our staff and play other places, and we always get a lot out of that.
Yeah, for sure.
I am zero apology. I am a stealer of ideas. And so that is I would totally be like, oh, I'm taking that. That's a great idea. Write that down, Carrie, my wife.
Well, to be fair, Chris steals ideas, but he also shares all of his ideas through speaking, through his writing, and through the podcast and everything else. So
nice. Our third room is magic themed. And I was an amateur magician in high school and college and earned pizza money that way. So I wanted to do a magic room eventually. And so we were three quarters into it and thought, oh my goodness, I need to make sure we haven't, you know, come up with ideas that are already out there. Cause we actually took our staff to play a few magic themed rooms. And I will say one idea was so impressive that we barred it and shifted a little bit. But
nice.
I've done that. It's all good.
So Vanishing Act was your third room?
So we did two pop-ups after the USS McCoy room. Right. The fall one, and we did a Christmas themed room based on Christmas Carol called Scrooge. So it was the counting house of Scrooge and Cratchit. And you were trying to find an antidote for us Tiny Tim's ailment. Anyway, yeah, two pop-ups, but now our third permanent room. Yeah.
Gotcha. So, John, what were the difficulties in starting an escape room business?
So we weren't sure what kind of budget to set up for this. And our space flooded. We're in the basement. Oh, our space flooded, I think, twice during build out, which was very frustrating and sad. We thought maybe this location isn't going to work. But it forced us to get all our electronics above the floodplain and design in a way that we've weathered a couple more floodings. This problem is, we're trying to correct it. But anyway, so that was a challenge. But we took our time, not feeling a rush to get going. Oh, with one exception. Okay, so it was very important to me that we be the premier escape room for our little town. One day I saw a painted van from an escape room. I don't think it was a franchise, but they were a coastal escape room I'd heard of, and they were parked up on a street in town. I thought, oh my goodness, in front of a building that was for sale. I thought, oh my goodness, we're going to have competition. So we quickly promoted an event in town as Black Mountain Escape, you know, to get our name out there and to have a kind of a foothold as a company in the community. Later, I learned it was just somebody visiting family.
That's funny. So
they weren't competition. But yeah, I think part of what's been good for us is growing organically. So we knew we were going to start slow. We're going to use some items we have and use the knowledge that we have about basic electronics or mechanics and build our first room and then learn from that. And yeah, initially we were running all the rooms ourselves. And then the next challenge, as you all know, becomes staffing this thing so that we're not having to run every room. Oh, and we had the COVID challenge. We were a year in when COVID hit and shut down for a while. And a lot of businesses in our town didn't make it through that, but we held on and made it through. And that allowed us actually to build out our second room.
I will say that when you go in was amazing just getting to the room. I don't know how you came up with that or how you rigged it, but just that lobby experience was amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that because it is such a small lobby that we wanted to give it some punch in a couple of ways. And yeah, folks that visit will discover that.
I've never been, so I can't spoil anything. But I think lobby, and that just, it starts you off on such a good foot. If you have a cool, here's how you get in, here's how it starts. Because there's been so many rooms there. You just walk in, oh, you're here for the room, blah, blah, blah. And then you just, okay, here's the rules, we go in. But man, do you get a good, like, entrance and fun things like that.
It's memorable.
It'll stick with you. So that's awesome.
My business partner, by the way, and I both had camp experience. And so the whole concept of teachable moments and not letting them go by was in our DNA. So he had decided on a design element in the lobby that's basically just four Edison bulbs hanging at different heights. And we use that with every group. We say, we have a pretest question for you. And we have them look at those and discern what the differences are. And then we point out, and we try to make this as simple as we can, but we point out that just as each of those lights is different, each is giving light to our lobby, each of you is going to see things in the escape room that others in the group miss. Communication is key. We see heads nodding. They appreciate, I think, that little teachable moment if we can deliver it
Okay, stealing that. Love that. So any other difficulties in running the room?
We've had great success with young room hosts. I know some very sharp people and have met very sharp people who've been great room hosts, but because they're still in high school, the scheduling of these folks is tricky. And so we've got great coverage on weekends most of the time, but spottier at other times. And I have not wanted to, you know, put out any help wanted ads. I want to organically meet the people that we would like to hire. And that's, by the grace of God, we've been able to do that. But I guess, if anything, I would want to have a couple more consistent folks who could take a room most any time.
Yeah. Did you get staff from the camp at all?
My original business partner. And then, yeah, actually our first general manager was also a camp person. Camp folks can do anything. There are a lot of local camps in our region. We try to give a discount to the staff for their nights off. And I don't want to steal anyone away from a camp, but we have our radar up when someone sharp comes along.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you have any live actors in your room or not, but I know that Kurt and I have talked about that before. I'm like, oh, camp people are so good at that because they're used to doing the skits and the silliness.
Yeah. Tina and I are looking for a new space. Is there anything you'd be like, keep your eye out for this, or you shouldn't, here's a tip or trick?
Yeah, I guess it would be access. Build your set in such a way that areas where you need wire repair or other, but you could really get creative. We have behind the scene alleys for actually most all of our rooms where we can get to things, repair and special effects.
Yeah, so that's something I hadn't thought about. Mm. That's good.
Our one at camp, anytime a wire goes out, I have to crawl over something, underneath something, through a
right
way to
and
do
yeah,
it.
And we even have creative panels in the space that people don't access, but having that behind the, literally we call it backstage area, is helpful.
Yeah. Do you guys have live actors in yours?
What we chose to do is, and this is kind of part of our secret sauce, but we wanted to have each of our rooms have an initial element of interaction with a person in character. So to start the immersion for any of our rooms, even if you've reacted with the off the street room host, that person becomes a character as the room begins. And we didn't want to make that too intrusive. So it's fairly light for two of our rooms. When we did the magic room, we wanted a way to have a little more magic with a human happen. And so Kurt knows there's some shenanigans where the magician actor comes in, and because you've accidentally summoned them. So our current general manager, who's wonderful, can play that role. I can play that role. And one 17-year-old, he was 16 when he learned the role, can play it. He had some magic experience and theater experience, but we can't have all of our room hosts that we hire play that specific role. So that is a limitation when you're thinking of live actors. Our other roles could be played by male or female, and that's worked out nicely.
Yeah. And I will say, with Vanishing Act, it's a great room on its own, but it's really that the acting part that makes that game so memorable and so fun.
Good deal. I appreciate that, Kurt. And I appreciated your comments on Morty. That was very encouraging.
Yeah. Kurt and I were just talking about actors. I remember the ones I've been to that had a live actor, like they stick in you. And so do you think you'll keep that going as you create rooms, keeping live
actors? Yeah, I really do. I really do think that we want to make that part of our shtick, that and being as immersive as possible.
Mm-hmm. So we know some owners who do consulting, and half of their rooms, great rooms, have an actor. And the other half don't. They're like, don't do it. I'd say 75% of our favorite rooms have actors. Mm. Yeah, they're like, listen, for the limitations you say, not everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. And if you get a team in there and you've got a GM that doesn't really pull it off, that could ruin their whole experience. So we're still debating on whether we want to have an acting element in our games or not.
So. Yeah. And I would say, and I guess this is from the camping background too, part of my motivation there was I want to let these folks grow some skills they may not have yet. And if we hire someone, we see in them potential for coaching. And we see that the very small introductory acting role, if we can coach them well, they both grow and it's good for customers' experience. Yeah.
So talking about your staff, we kind of talked about, you know, that you organically want to find them. Is training, do you have a training system?
We've created a manual for each of our rooms. And so we brought on two new young staff and specifically trained them for a room that we needed more coverage for. It was booking more. And then they are now learning the second room, but have a different manual. And we found that we've got a new, back to camping and the whole orientation thing. We've got a new training manual for each of the rooms and find that shadowing an experienced person is the best way for them to learn that. And then referencing their manual.
How long does it take to train somebody for one room?
We'll do an intensive with them on logistic things if we're hiring them, and then have them observe us 3 or 4 times, and then give them elements of the meeting the public and giving the spiel. And then we'll role play the acting part with just our staff giving them feedback. The sitting in the control room piece, and we have the software for loaded clues that they catch on too quickly. I guess the thing that only comes with running a room many times is the troubleshooting, right? If something goes wrong or doesn't work, learning those parts is continual training. And our general manager now has been great about updating folks as we fix something or change something.
So tell me, what is your process on designing the room? Like, how do you go about creating it and getting it going?
My son, who's now 25 and with us as we were laying out the magic room, because he was going to be the person programming some Arduinos and using laser sensors and a knock sensor and various things. And he's a logical thinker. And so we had a giant whiteboard and realized that we needed to move things around. So we got these little post-it notes and basically did our game flow storyline and where it branched off and moved around post-it notes. And that part is a favorite part for me. It's, you know, creating something out of nothing and tying your clever ideas together. And things, when people are building off another person's idea, it's just, that's wonderful for me. And he helped guide us through that. It's funny, I just took the post-it notes off this 2-year-old brainstorming board the other day, but I took plenty of pictures of it just for nostalgia. So that's what we will use for our fourth room. We will get our game flow with a whiteboard and post-it notes. And I have liked the fact that our puzzle ideas are standalone, independent, and then we figure out where they fit best in the flow and in the logic of, we wanted our rooms to make sense. For instance, on the ship, we wanted it to be like you've literally entered a ship where 3 crew members were living in this space. And so you're getting in their lockers and finding logical things they would have had to remember codes by.
So what about set design? Now, how do you determine like what your set's going to look like and who does the build out and the decorating? Yeah. Is that all you?
Yeah, all of that has been us. I get a kick out of mentoring young people and learning power tools for the first time. I did that with my own children. And I think there's a way to do that that's safe and is empowering for folks. We enjoy building them out ourselves. I start with SketchUp on the computer, just making sure some things will fit with the ideas we have. The ship room especially, it was tight quarters, and we had to make sure that certain things logically made sense. And so you start with that. And then I like to cull a lot of old materials from torn down things too. So I'm not too proud to not dumpster raid.
So with SketchUp, did you teach yourself how to use that? And do you use the free version or do you pay for it?
So I used the free version. It gave me everything I needed for both a kitchen remodel and for the escape room. Yeah, I don't think I've needed any. Well, I've bought a few elements that you can buy and fit in to make sure you've got the size of your toilet, that kind of thing. Nice. It's definitely a wonderful tool to have. Yeah. And then one of our employees has taught himself and actually 3D prints some of our props. That was another exciting discovery, is that you can conceive of something and then 3D print exactly what you want. And this guy has helped us with a number of things on that, and actually helped some other escape rooms too.
Chris and I have thought about or talked about the whole 3D printing, and we both want to get one.
I have a connection. I'm getting one soon.
Nice. Hey, shout out. Go to escapecustoms.com and you'll see some of our props are featured on this guy's website.
Oh, cool.
Escapecustoms.com.
All right. Nice. Cool.
I'll check that out. So you talked about the USS McCoy being a little tight and small. I have the same issue because I'm in a tiny little camp. We got one room. How do escape rooms, like, how do you guys deal with accessibility, things like that? And we just had this ladies retreat, and one part of my room, they have to crawl through an area. And there was one group, I'm like, oh, I don't know if any lady in this group can crawl. They're all a little elderly. And so I was very worried about it, but one did, and then the rest I let through a side door. But do you think of that ahead of time or plan that out? How does that go for accessibility?
So when we did our first room, we hadn't really thought about that. And we had a prominent member of the community had been paralyzed in a tragic accident. And his wife called wondering, when we opened, she was wondering, is this accessible? And I felt awful that we were even trying to think of a way that it could be. So when we did our magic room, it is wheelchair accessible. And I have played other rooms where they've given alternative, right? You either crawl through this pipe or here's the way to get through this door. So if I were designing from scratch, I would think of that alternative way that didn't always have to be used, but could be used.
Like, escape rooms don't seem to have to follow ADA guidelines as much. I don't know. Pretty much almost every escape room I've been in, I'm like, how do you get a wheelchair in here? This is tight.
Yeah, another part of accessibility is, and we came across this a couple times, if somebody is colorblind, because so many puzzles deal with colors. And at one point, Tina and I were talking, it was like, not only if we're going to do a puzzle like that, we also need either patterns or textures as well.
So, we had already designed one puzzle with scents, four scents you had to match with spaces right as COVID hit. So we were going to open this room when the ban was over and realized some people have lost their sense of smell. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I know every time we go in, we're like, oh, not a smell puzzle. We played one game.
I love the idea. But
you like that, hard. Chris?
I do. I love it. But the one I have that's in my escape box, they've all, like, all the smells have kind of combined. I'm like, oh, this is strawberry lemon coffee. Like, I'm pretty sure.
We played one game where there's all these pies and they smell different. Mm-hmm. And some of them smell really bad, like skunk. And you're just like, I don't want to have to smell those again to figure out which is which. It's so bad.
I love that. That's a great idea. I have a skunk. We have a pet skunk in our camp. We can do that.
The Stinkerbell.
So. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Love her. So John, as far as like tech, do you build your own tech puzzles? Do you buy the puzzles? And how did you learn the tech?
Yeah, great. We attempted some things on our own initially with linear actuators and pulling power from an old computer power source. Then went to an Arduino seminar at an escape room owner, small North Carolina group, and learned some things there enough to add our first Arduino, which gave us an idea for some other things we could do, which we incorporated into our second room and relied heavily on Alistair. Are you familiar with British guy? Oh, we've learned so much from him, and I'm a patron of his because of how helpful those ideas were to our second room. And then both from things we learned from him and my son's tech background, we went a step further with the magic room.
Nice.
So Kurt keeps telling me the Carolinas have this whole owners group. That's really good. Tell me more about that. Like, how does it work? Is somebody in charge of that? Or what's that look like?
Yeah, so I think they've traded off leadership. Yeah, North Carolina, South Carolina, early on as we were getting started was a key time for them. And we would meet, if not quarterly, I don't know. I don't think it was monthly, but at a different folks' escape room, play the rooms, and then have a meeting. My business partner and I were more involved initially. When COVID hit, my business partner needed a side hustle, and so turned some attention to that. And frankly, I haven't kept up as others do with that group, but it's still a marvelous group. And so I still connect with some of those people, but haven't connected in a while. But we learned a lot from them too, related to marketing and other things.
When we went to Southern California, amazing community. Like Southern California has amazing community of owners, but also amazing community of enthusiasts. You'd go into an escape room and you would see a board of all the other places, their rack cards and everything else.
Yeah.
And they really promoted each other, especially the good ones. And the only other place that I felt like the owners had that kind of community was in the Carolinas that I could see. So that was really neat.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's nice to have.
For sure. So let's talk about your upcoming project. What's it all about? Whatever you want to share.
Very good. Yet this summer, our hope is to convert an area close by to the fictitious headquarters that controls time travel. So what we've come up with is a parallel room to our current time travel room when you're going back to the past. The time travel room begins with a reference to our cousin Marty, who infiltrated this company that controls time travel, and he brought back two things. So the fourth room will be, your host will be Marty, male or female, it'll be Marty, probably wearing a red or an orange vest and 80s jeans. Anyway, but they will escort you to infiltrate this Flux Core Industries. And what we have is a space that's already divided into about five mini offices, very small, but five doors that could or couldn't be locked, but in each of those, and a reception area, and it actually has a bathroom. So this could be a 75-minute room or a 90-minute room.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. We're not sure how that would all time out. So we've got to think that through. But the fact that they wouldn't have to leave the room if they wanted to, or leave the space if they wanted to go to the bathroom. anyway, so it will, that will be what we're brainstorming and beginning on this summer.
And interesting.
Who knows how long it'll take. Yeah.
We talked to a couple of owners who have two 90-minute rooms and then the rest are 60. They said the 60-minute rooms book more, but because of the higher price, the 90-minute rooms still make more money.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about, that's good to know. And this space allows us to have larger groups. We're limited with our rooms, especially the ship, and how many we want to put in there. And this would, you know, have the potential for more folks at once.
I can't remember if you have a minimum number of players.
So I think our website says that, and we have people call saying, can two play? And basically we have a minimum price. So if two are playing, they're actually paying what four would pay. The minimum price is if four are playing.
Do you get pushback on that?
We haven't since we framed it that way. The fact that we need a minimum, there's a minimum cost to run the room.
Yeah.
And if two of you, you can either find some friends or two of you can play for that minimum cost to run the room.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like that's totally fair. Usually it's just my wife and I, when we go out, I would rather pay more than be in a public room with random strangers.
We played a couple of rooms that had a four-person minimum, but you needed four people. There was so much to do that you needed it. And in fact, I can think of one off the top of my head. I think it was a 75-minute room. It was just too much for two people to do. They let us do it. We had to pay for the four person and they let us do it. And we weren't even close to finishing. So we want to go back and do it again. But I wish they would offer maybe a double the time on a weekday so that we can actually play ourselves. Unless we're playing with Chris and his wife, Carrie, then we could get our four. But it's hard because we're in two different places in the country to get together and do that. But I always thought if you had a room like that, if you could just either double the time or something, and we still pay for, I guess, four. I guess I wouldn't want to pay for eight. But if it's a slow time, we'd love to just work our way through a room like that. So the new room, you would have the same thing, right? Four-person minimum?
Yes. In fact, there'll probably be some puzzles that require more than two people. For that reason. And I think people understand that if it's, you literally can't do this puzzle if they're not more than two of you.
Yeah, we missed out on a lot of rooms because of that as we were traveling. We always look on Morty and we're like, oh, this looks good. Oh, four-person minimum. We can't play. Occasionally we'd call and ask, but sometimes they'd be like, no, it has to be four. I think that's about all we have. What's a good way to get a hold of you if somebody wants to reach out?
Very good. You can email info@blackmountainescape.com. Our website is blackmountainescape.com, and it's escape singular, not escapes, right? Yeah. Escape. Blackmountainescape.com. Okay. I'm John. I'm a J-O-N Brooks, and you'll see our number on that website and call anytime.
Here's a question I always think about when I see that, like, I want to get a hold of maybe the owner or something, and they have the info ad or whatever. Who's reading that? Does that go to you, or is it your general manager that first sees it?
Oh, very good. Yeah, so our general manager initially sees that and alerts me to something personal. And I don't mind email related to the building that we're in. I'm J-O-N, John, at thejunction101.com. So thejunction101.com.
Okay. Well, John, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah. This has been Kurt and Chris. Thanks for listening to Mystery Soup Podcast. Until next time, may your clues be clear and your escapes be triumphant. Keep puzzling, my friends.
See ya.
Mystery Soup. Mystery Soup.